Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studios.
This is Jake and Stacy on 710 ESPN Seattle. Streaming live on the 710 Sports app and at 710sports.com.
Now, here are your hosts, Jake Heaps and Stacy.
Jake, you want to take us in with some of that energy?
You want me to bring some of that energy?
Well, I was going to say, you should go ahead and ring in the show screaming, "It's Friday!"
I don't think the listeners want to hear that.
I think they do.
I don't think that they're ready for that to be blowing through their speakers.
They have to deal with me.
But you know what? You and DJ get to enjoy that every single time
that
I'm in here.
What a blessing it is.
It is. I know you guys love it so much.
Jake is in studio fresh from San Diego. How was it, my friend?
Fantastic. I mean, it's beautiful. It's sunny. Can't complain.
You got a lot of pickleball in, I hear.
Well, yeah, a decent amount of pickleball,
yeah.
Which is kind of the new craze right now. But just so you know, in the past month, I've gotten a lot better. A lot better.
Well,
a lot better.
I can only assume that you saw Russell Wilson while you were out there, which is kind of leading into the conversation we're having right now, because
mm-hmm.
some people are a little upset that the veterans, including Russell Wilson, are not at Seahawks OTAs. Now,
I saw this.
As a reminder, before I jump into this conversation, OTAs are voluntary workouts. They are not mandatory workouts. There is going to be a trio of mandatory workouts, mandatory minicamp, that'll start on June 15th. So next week. And I think there's a couple more OTAs before then. And for the record, Pete Carroll said, look, the veterans aren't here. And he was asked specifically, are you a little bit nervous that the veterans and the rest of the NFC West, and that includes Matthew Stafford with the Rams, Aaron Donald with the Rams, are you concerned the rest of the veterans in the NFC West are showing up, that they've got pretty full camps and you're sitting here with maybe 35 guys in camp and pretty much Akello Witherspoon and a pair of quarterbacks as your only veterans there? And he said, not really. He said, you know what? We got like virtual meetings that we're doing and we've been in constant communication. So what I'm curious about is the other side of that, because on the one hand, Jake, I am all for player rights. I will constantly side with players over owners, usually over the team. I also understand that the optics aren't great. Like, I'm of two minds with this.
You are.
And I'm not sure where to land.
So as I have taken this conversation, as I've heard and I've listened to it, I have been very intrigued by the conversation, because I do think that there is an optics issue. I do think that when you look at other teams specifically within your division that are participating in OTAs, that there is an immediate optics issue, that people could look to it and go, well, why isn't Russell Wilson and Bobby Wagner, why aren't the veterans there when other vets from other teams, specifically in the toughest division of football, that they're all there, right? And I think it leads to the thought that as you get here into cut number three, Danny O'Neill earlier today on Danny and Gallant had this point to make.
If you ask for more, shouldn't you do more? And instead, it feels like there's I'm employee number three, and this is we're going to stick to our offseason approach. And maybe Russ is doing everything he can as they train down in San Diego, and I have no idea the lengths to which they're going and burning. To which I'm like, well, but you have an opportunity to work with a new coach, and you're not doing it here, so don't tell me that you're doing everything you can, because there is a little bit more.
So now the other part of it, and I want to go on to cut number four, Danny O'Neill further goes and talks about the Seahawks and how it makes him feel as he watches other teams participate in OTAs, and he's watching the Seahawks and the vets do their own thing.
The Seahawks, in my opinion, for about at least two and maybe 3 years, have kind of been at this spot where they're good enough to matter, but they're something a little short of great. They're good enough that you expect them to get into the playoffs, and you know that they're going to be a factor, and they at no point, other than maybe the first half of last season, have looked like a great team. And what it feels like is having players and the veterans, the best players not present for the offseason training, is we've got this figured out.
Now, I understand the feeling and the nervous energy that some people may have with this. And again, the optics of this. But I'm telling you that they are getting their work in, and they are able to get it done at a high level. In terms of their virtual meetings, it has been very impressive to see the progress that they have been able to make with every guy on that roster, particularly the veterans, in terms of a new offense, in terms of learning the system. This doesn't stop, right? It's not like they're not in the building and they're not learning and they're not being with the coach. It is they are learning virtually. They're going through the process just like everybody through COVID made adjustments. Now, I'm not saying it's the end-all, be-all, or it's the best-case scenario, but they are not behind the eight ball dramatically. And what I would also say is that when you look at other teams around the NFL through OTAs, is every team that is back has agreed to a cut-down version of OTAs. And some have gotten started earlier than others. So, for example, the 49ers, the Rams, the Cardinals, and pretty much every other team in the NFL, Stacey, that are participating in OTAs now, their clock has started, and they're probably going to be there for only 2 to 3 weeks, right? And so it leads me to this final point, that this cut that I heard from Pete Carroll, cut number 2, is very telling as to what exactly is going on.
Our activity is going to pick up as we get closer to minicamp. We expect a pretty darn good attendance in minicamp. There's a couple guys that have some special situations, but for the most part, we expect our guys to be there. The week before is a really important week as well in preparation for it. So we'll see more guys coming through as we get to that, to the middle of June there.
So some teams may have started earlier than the Seahawks, but they're still going to be getting around the same work, the same time frame. I just believe that the veterans aren't showing up till later.
Now, I'll say this. First of all, there's a really great column by Larry Stone that I'm going to reference in a second. If you haven't read it yet, I highly recommend it, because he also kind of gives the background of what's led into very careful not to call it players boycotting or protesting OTAs, but rather just what's led into the decision to opt out of voluntary workouts. And then kind of compares and contrasts that to the power the Major League Baseball union has been able to gain. So I'll get to that in a second. Before I say any of that, once again, I support that. It's not just the context of the rest of the NFC and those veterans showing up that's important. It's also the context of what's been going on in Seattle with Seahawks players. And that's important specifically when it comes to Russell Wilson. You had an offense and a team last year that looked like, for the first time since 2015, it could be a Super Bowl team. And for the first time since the year prior, it could be a Super Bowl winner. You had an offense that was flying high, that was demolishing other teams, leading the league in points. You had a quarterback leading the league in touchdowns while throwing, I think, just 3 interceptions up until his game against the Arizona Cardinals, which might have been their first loss of the season. It was a fantastic performance. Then you had a second half collapse. We've talked about it endlessly, right, Jake? I mean, we've gone over this a million times. We all know this. You guys listening know this. You had a second half collapse on offense. Then you had your quarterback come out and say, look, not only am I not happy and not thrilled about getting sacked a ton, but also, and this was covered less because it was in postseason press conference that just wasn't as spicy or juicy as saying I don't love being sacked a lot during an interview with Dan Patrick. In addition to saying he didn't like being hit, he also said, basically, hey, we need to buckle down and figure out how to get back to a Super Bowl. It was when he was talking about, I want to be in on that hiring of Shane Waldron, because it's disappointing. It is disappointing to be that good in the regular season and not have postseason success. I mean, and this is important. They haven't been to an NFC championship since 2015. They've won one playoff game in the last 4 seasons. And since their Super Bowl loss, they've won just 3 playoff games, which is wild, considering that in every single season except for one of those, they've had double-digit wins. So you've got that context of just Seattle, regardless of what the rest of the NFC West is doing.
Mm-hmm.
If no one with those 3 teams was showing up, there would be plenty of fans still saying, well, wait a minute. We have a team that's great in the regular season that can't get it together in the postseason, that fell apart in the second half, lost unceremoniously to the Rams. The quarterback was complaining, where is he? Where are these guys? What's going on? So I guess my question for you before we move on to anything else is like, well, what's going on? What's Russell Wilson doing then? I mean, I think that most fans just want to know, like, is this being fixed?
Yeah, it's absolutely being fixed. And I understand the question, and I also, as I said before, I understand the optics, right? I understand the optics of the situation. Now, this isn't just a Russell Wilson decision, right? This is the veteran leadership as a whole. So we're talking about Russell Wilson, Bobby Wagner. We're talking about Quandre Diggs. We're talking about Dwayne Brown, right? This is a unified front that you're seeing from the Seahawks veteran leadership as a whole, right? So now if you're going down that road, now what do you do? You're doing your absolute best to make sure that you're getting the best quality work that you can possibly get in. And I'm telling you right now, from someone that is seeing things from behind the scenes, that the work that has been put in by, and I can only speak to Russell Wilson in this particular case, has been spectacular in terms of where everything is at in terms of the communication between Russell Wilson and Shane Waldron. They're not together physically in person, but working together quite a bit to make sure that they are on the same page with the offense. Russell Wilson is he has been an absolute maniac this offseason in terms of the work, in terms of regrouping, refocusing, revamping everything that he has done in the best shape that he's ever been in. And I'm watching this guy, and I can't wait for everybody else to see him. Like, honestly, I can't wait for everybody else to see what he's going to be within this offense, and it's exciting. And he's also had other guys come to the facility, come to his house to work with him. But there will be a point in time as I go back to that cut, that reference cut of Pete Carroll. Why is Pete Carroll saying, "I'm okay, I support the players"? He has referenced many, many times mm-hmm. before.
And he said, we're not negotiating, we're having a conversation.
Exactly. This isn't a negotiation, we're having a conversation in terms of how this is going to go down, what we think is best, and how we're going to move forward in terms of what we're going to offer and when guys are going to show up, when they're not going to show up. And Pete Carroll, to me, as I listened to him talk, felt very comfortable with how things are going down. And again, I want to play cut number two for you because I think it's very revealing in terms of how Pete Carroll believes this is going to go down and that this will be enough time, enough field work, enough time at the building for these veteran players to get everything they need in order to supplement all of the virtual learning that they're doing right now.
Our activities will pick up as we get closer to minicamp. We expect a pretty darn good attendance in minicamp. There's a couple guys that have some special situations, but for the most part, we expect our guys to be there. The week before is a really important week as well in preparation for it. So we'll see more guys coming through as we get to that, to the middle of June there.
So to me, that outlines a very specific plan that Pete Carroll feels like is in place, that he feels like will be executed, and that is why he is comfortable at this point in time. So is this something that we're freaking out right now that will be a non-story here in a matter of a few weeks? Probably. I think that that's where we're at. And then here's the other thing that I'm getting the text line talking about leadership, talking about desire, talking about all these different things. Do you not think that Russell Wilson, Bobby Wagner, Jamal Adams, Dwayne Brown, go down the list of all these veteran players, that they would do anything to jeopardize their ability to go and win a Super Bowl? Ask yourself that question. Do you think that these guys that put their bodies on the line for this team, for this franchise that you love so much, that they would do anything to jeopardize their ability to be great? They are making a calculated decision that they feel like this is in the best interest of the team, of themselves individually for their bodies, and they are doing the best that they can physically to get themselves in the best shape possible and still manage to get all of it in and collectively get together. They will be there for mandatory minicamp. Now, will they be there for the week prior that Pete Carroll alluded to? We'll see. But I think that as you guys are going on and talking about and questioning these guys' desire and urgency and ability to, you know, put forth their effort to go and win, I get the optics, but it doesn't adequately define what these guys are actually doing to get ready for this season and put forth their best foot forward in order to have a better year than what they had last year.
Well, and
I guarantee you these guys have been working tirelessly.
Yeah. Well, and as a final point that I don't have enough time to get into, but just to kind of capstone this part of the conversation there's two separate conversations. One, the optics of what it looks like for Russell Wilson and the vets to not be there when you're trying to win the toughest division in football, which we both agree, not great. I think we also both agree, though, that like the ultimate goal of what players as a whole in the league are trying to do, completely fair. That you're trying to figure out a way to have a better power balance between players, the union, and between the league,
mm-hmm.
that pales in comparison to what MLB has been able to do. And like Larry Stone wrote in his column, it's so evident, and you can tell it by just the number of players that are appearing and that aren't, that there's no consistency, that some teams have 30 guys and some teams have full rosters showing up, and you just aren't on the same page, and this is all part of an effort to try to get more power, and they're still figuring it out. And right now, it's why things seem so jumbled and why things seem, you know, like there's no continuity or easy comparison there. So it's a completely separate conversation that's also really fascinating.
And we could talk about this for a while, but the other thing that I want to point out to is that when they get on the field and they're practicing, they're not practicing 11-on-11 drills. This is a modified version of what OTAs is compared to everything else. This is across the entire league. So you're showing up to the facility in the building to meet with coaches in person. That's great. Get out on the field together and walk through and go through practices. I think that is a positive thing. But you're not missing out on 11-on-11 drills and one-on-ones and all these
Jake,
other things.
I think it's important to say you're missing out on 7-on-7s.
Oh, 7-on-7s, all those things. But my point is, for everybody that's freaking out, okay, is if the Rams and the 49ers show up for a 2 to 3 week block window that's going on before now, or going on now, and the Seahawks and the veterans and the players show up for a 2 to 3 block window that's later in the offseason, what's the difference? What's the difference? What are you hot and bothered about?
So you're saying what are 3 days
so
in May?
So what I'm saying, yes, what are 3 days in May? So my point is before you freak out, before you get all hot and bothered and lathered up about what's going on around you, okay, wait and see what happens in June. Then from there, we can have a discussion. If they only show up for minicamp, then yeah, I think that the other teams in the division probably got a leg up on you, and they were able to get together more than you did, which is something that I wouldn't like to see. No one's saying that getting together at the building or being at practice isn't valuable. But what I'm saying is let's see how it plays out before we say that these guys are doing it. These guys are getting in more work than the Seahawks right now, because I don't think when it's all said and done that that's going to be the case.
All right, it is time for Three Questions, brought to you by Tila Mortgage.
It's time for Three Questions.
Can't wait for it.
Every day at 11:15, three burning questions for Jake Heaps and Stacey Rost.
That's the dumbest question you could ask. What?
Chris Flexen, guys. He has come
what
out
a
of,
night.
He has come out of absolutely nowhere. I know he had one bad outing against the Padres last week.
Like a really bad outing.
It was really bad. But his ERA has really been sitting in the mid-threes. He has a 5-2 record. What do you do with him? What is his future with the Mariners?
I would say his future with the Mariners is not going to be down the road. I don't think that you're going to see Chris Flexen a part of this rotation for years and years to come. I think that Chris Flexen is one of those stopgap players that we've talked about that you would love to see be out there at second base or, you know, be a part of the lineup. This is the one example that Jerry DePoto did a very good job in making the right addition in the offseason. Who knew that Chris Flexen, all right, that everybody was heavily criticizing or having major questions about would come out and be your most consistent pitcher for this year? Now, you can draw conclusions based off of that statement however you like, but that's the truth. He's been your most consistent pitcher. And part of the reason is because he's gotten he had a full workload last year being in the Korean Baseball League. And his arm is full go. It's full strength. You're not having to worry about managing his workload and his pitch count or lack thereof from the previous season. I think that's a huge reason why Chris Flexen has paid off dividends.
It was also so nice, just in general. I don't know what the answer is moving forward. I mean, some of the prospects they're still looking at are still a year, 2 years away. So I would guess you seriously consider bringing him next year as well. I don't know the details of his deal. What I will say is it completely reminded me of that line from Dumb and Dumber of just when I think, now in this case it isn't dumber, but just when I think it couldn't get anything, get worse. What is it? You totally redeem yourself. I'm butchering it. Jake is so mad.
No, it was
Chris
fine.
Flexen's
it was
ERA.
Good. It was good. That was a solid effort for someone who's never seen the movie.
In his last outing against the Padres was like 1,000. And he was phenomenal in this outing. It was so nice to see. And I'm reminding myself as someone, you know, who's watching the Mariners to be happy about those smaller wins and be excited about it, and that those guys should feel good about it. And, you know, I'm so used to seeing the big picture and stepping back and then getting fired up. But I think Mariners fans should feel good about last night.
Number two.
Yeah, I really did butcher it.
It's okay. It's all right. Stacey, one day you'll watch the movie, great of a movie it is, and then you won't butcher it anymore. One day.
I will say that never misquote an Adam Sandler movie or Dumb and Dumber in front of Jake Heaps.
I just want to say, if anyone's watching on video stream, 710sports.com/video, while Stacey was saying that quote, Jake was staring at Stacey with his mouth open.
I know, like, that's why I was under pressure.
Jim Carrey, Will Ferrell, Adam Sandler. Just get it right.
I got it.
Just get it right.
Question two. Yesterday, Marcellus Wiley on Speak for Yourself said things might get a little awkward for Russell Wilson and the offensive line once the quarterback returns to Seahawks facilities. Do you guys think there will be bad blood between the two parties?
What did Pete Carroll say? What has he said recently in his interviews?
It was all made up.
All made up. No, not that. Not that. He was saying old news. That's all. It's old news. I mean, it's long past. No, this is not going to be awkward. It's not going to be awkward when Russ shows up and you see the offensive line. A lot of conversations have been had throughout the offseason. All good. Let's go to work. That's what it's going
to
be about.
And I'll say this, too. You don't have to be someone's best friend or like someone to recognize that you have a shared goal. Let's say hypothetically that any of those offensive linemen are like, man, I am not cool with what you said. They're all grown men in a room that can say that to each other. And they also all have the exact same shared goal, which is to get to a Super Bowl. The second thing I'll say is that perhaps no one is better able to compartmentalize mistakes, issues, disputes than professional athletes. Like, you might mess up. If you're a wide receiver who drops a game-winning touchdown pass and leads to a loss in the final seconds, you have to be able to go back into the locker room and just, sorry, guys, on me. And then everyone's got to learn to not hold it against you for 15 more games, in this case 16 more games, because you got to go out and win again. So I think that if you're talking about people who are able to move on from that, I think it's going to be NFL players.
Number three.
Okay, so yesterday on the timeline, we played the Pirates radio call of Pittsburgh just booting the ball around when they just had to step on first with two outs. The Cubs somehow score a run, and Javier Baez ends up on second.
Did you see the version of this that had Ken Burns baseball music over it?
Fantastic. Absolutely amazing. Fantastic. I have a question here about that.
Okay.
Which play was worse? The Pirates booting the ball around?
Oh, no.
You know what's coming, right?
I do.
Or Omar Narvaez vacating home plate in 2019 against the Astros.
It's not close. It's this one. It's the Pirates.
Why?
Because it was abysmal. It was multiple mistakes, multiple errors. It was because of the simplicity of you could have stepped on the bag at first and gotten him out. And not only that, it was the double slide. It was that he was able to slide into first and then, because of an error, get up and slide back into second. Like, this, the entire series blows my mind. You look at the Cubs bench, they're dying of laughter. It doesn't get more embarrassing than that.
I would agree. Yeah. Now, the other reason why is because at the end of the day, did David Moore mess up? Or Dylan Moore, sorry. Did Dylan Moore mess up? No, he did not. He made the right play and threw it to home, and Omar Narvaez is the one player that made a massive mistake. What ended up happening with that particular play with the Pirates, the first baseman made a boneheaded error. Then, from there, you proceeded to have three other errors in that play. So I think there was a whole lot more that going wrong for the Pirates than it was the Mariners in that moment, as bad as that was.
One of the best things I've ever seen. I saw a tweet that was like, I don't know how it's going to happen, but Pirates got to figure out how to hit their own first baseman with a pitch. I don't know how it's going to happen, but they got to figure it out. It was a tweet yesterday.
They could
yesterday.
Do it in BP.
Yeah, it was a tweet yesterday. It was hilarious. All right. Now, normally, I'm not a huge fan of trying to draw real-world, regular job comparisons that we all have to what professional athletes do. There's just so much context that's missing. But in this one example, I didn't mind what Mike Salk had to say when he compared real-world jobs to what's happening with OTAs. You're going to want to hear it. That's next.
You're listening to Jake and Stacey.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studios.
Streaming live on the 710 Sports app and at 710sports.com.
Now, here are your hosts, Jake Heaps and Stacey Ross.
Mike Salk is here again.
Sure am.
He's brought to you by Jafco Plumbing and Sewer. Mike, Normally, I hate real world comparisons. Jake and I have talked about this endlessly. I've talked to DJ about this before. I talked about it this morning. Like, I hate it when someone says, and look, you can hate what Russell Wilson did, and I'm still going to think that you're making a bad comparison when you say, imagine if I were to talk to my boss that way. And it's like, look, it's not the same. It is this. The context is 100% different when it's a quarterback versus head coach. And you can still
hate it.
You know,
most people like leak stuff to the media when things aren't going well with their job.
Exactly. Right. I mean, it's a completely different relationship. It doesn't make it right. It's just different. So yeah, I hate real world comparisons.
I all the time talk to Adam Schefter when I'm not happy.
Every day.
That happen
That's
here.
Exactly right. My agent.
You say that like you've ever had a real job.
We talked about this. Can I sidebar?
What real job have you had?
Well, that's a great question. I've had jobs that I love and enjoy. I've never had a job where I've had to feel like, man, I hate being here.
Talking about office gossip the other day and how my last boss used to have this thing where he'd, like on a Richter scale, he'd be like, I got an 8.0, hot goss. And it would be, you know, like some stupid
office
gossip.
Did you work at TMZ?
No, I didn't. And Jake was like, I've never done that. Like, I've never worked in an office. And I was like, well, the gossip you're getting is a lot juicier. I can tell you that right now. It's not about what Brenda did or, like, whatever to, I don't even know. Anyways.
Yeah, some of the stories that P. Rich used to tell back in the day.
Yeah, I'm guessing it's much more exciting than my dumb office gossip I was getting about food that was changing in a vending machine. Mike, you did make a real world comparison that I really liked, though.
Yeah, you know, it's almost a comparison. It's this idea of whether or not it's really more about whether or not the NFL can learn from the rest of the world, I guess I would say, right? It's not so much that I think they need to be the same, but I was just wondering whether or not with the world now embracing remote meetings, remote conversations, mm-hmm. Zoom, Teams, all the things people are using to now meet remotely, can the NFL relax some of its need to have everybody together? Can it relax for, and obviously for practice, you've got to be there for it to be in person and work on your, all that, of course. Mm-hmm. But for some of the coaches' meetings and the installation of plays and the playbook stuff, do you need to be in that big auditorium room together, or can it be done just as well online? And I don't know the answer to that, but I think that it's something they should at least be thinking about. It doesn't change the fact that for me, I don't care if it's voluntary. You should be there.
Well, that's where I'm kind of two minds about it. Like, I think it's bad optics to not go, but I also think that it's kind of lame to want to make every single real world comparison until someone says, well, don't you want to be able to kind of adjust your job since 1995?
This isn't a real world thing, though, for me. The voluntary thing. Like, that has nothing to do with whether or not I would go if I were at work. That's just from playing sports growing up. There's no such thing as voluntary. You do as much as you can. You work the hardest. You can't praise the guy who comes into training camp who's changed his body and worked the hardest. And I remember, and I assume the Seahawks do something like this, where you give, like, the best parking space to the guy with perfect lifting attendance over the offseason. Mm-hmm. You can't say that you value that, but then, oh, but if you don't show up, it's fine. Like, it's not fine. You want people who, it's the office space thing. Yes, it's annoying that the guy wants however many pieces of flair, but what you want is the person who chooses to have the most flair. That's the best employee.
I don't understand that reference, but I feel
you've never
like
seen
it's
Office
right.
Space? What the heck?
I'm sorry.
She hasn't seen any of the good comedies.
I already butchered a Dumb and Dumber line earlier that I tried to use out of context. I've disappointed a lot of people today.
But two things that you're saying that I think are really important to hit. The first question that you asked, do players need to be there? They proved last year and this year that no, they don't. For everybody out there that talks about OTAs, the beginning part of OTAs, the first month and a half of OTAs is you're just there at the facility, you're working out, you're going to meetings, and that's really it. That's the only value.
So can those meetings be done remotely?
Yes, they can.
Can the working out be done remotely?
And they have done that successfully. The working out can be done remotely, and I would argue can be done better. There are lots of veterans that think me going to the facility ruins my routine, and I'll never forget there were multiple veterans that felt like the last offseason was one of the best things that happened for them physically, their body. because they were able to train the way that they liked.
I mean, they're making that up, though.
No, they're not.
Sure, they are.
I would say that.
I'll tell you what. I really like not having to commute a half hour to work every day. It's better for my job.
There's guys that go and fly to Arizona or L.A. or
they
whatever
can still
to go
do
and
that,
train.
Though no one's stopping them from doing that.
Well,
it's just saying that
at some point,
at
the facility, you eventually do. You have to conform to what the team wants you to do. So I'm not saying that it's horrible. I'm just saying that it's a positive that players view, right? That they can have a positive that way. The second part of guys needing to show up for voluntary workouts, we wouldn't be having this discussion if it wasn't for a COVID year, right? This is another weird, awkward COVID year where everybody's still making adjustments. Everybody's doing their own thing. There's not one uniformed way of going about it, and every team's making their own adjustments. So you're seeing some teams that are only showing up for a couple weeks. You're seeing some teams that are showing up for the full meal deal, like Urban Meyer and the Jags. And you're seeing some teams like the Buccaneers who aren't showing up at all.
I think some people, yes, we wouldn't be having this discussion if not for COVID, but I think some people wouldn't be having this discussion if not for Russell Wilson.
I would agree with that, but I still think anytime your star quarterback, your star linebacker, your star safety, if they're not showing up,
we saw this
you're
every year.
Players.
I mean, every year Cliff Avril and Michael Bennett would say we're not showing up.
Yeah,
and I just thought it was wrong. I mean, I say that with great respect to both of them, who I think are great players and in many ways great leaders. But I don't understand why the only week Cliff Avril could go to Haiti to build houses, which was a tremendous thing to do, happened to occur during voluntary workouts. Like, you can't do that the week before, the week after. There's no other flights. There's no other time. If it turns out that truly was the only time, okay, fine. But it just felt like, yeah, I don't want to go there. I'm a veteran. I don't need to do that.
Yeah.
And I think when you're in, if you've ever been in management, you want people that go the extra mile. You want people that want to show up on a voluntary day because they're going to make the best players.
No doubt. And if you're a player, being somebody that's was in there when Michael Bennett wasn't there and Cliff Avril wasn't there and some of these other vets weren't there, you missed something. Mm-hmm. You missed that presence. Like, you really did. And it was a difference. When those guys showed up at training camp, you're like, oh, wow, this is very different with these guys here, and in a positive way. So there is something to that, no question. The only thing that I feel comfortable, the only reason why I feel comfortable in this situation is that the other teams around the league, the ones that are showing up for OTAs, like within the division, they're only here for a 2-3 block window. They are not going to be there for 2 to 3 months, and the Seahawks are saying, no, we're only going to be there for 3 days for veteran minicamp. They're in a finite time, and the Seahawks are just showing up at a later time than everybody else.
All right, he is Mike Salk, joins us every weekday at 11:30. Mike, have fun camping. Gross,
thank you. We mean gross.
I mean, it just doesn't sound
with
great.
With my giant pillow top.
Are you going to be
queen
there all weekend?
Have fun sleeping
all
outside.
All weekend? I mean, we have some options if we don't need, you know. There's, you know.
So they're
if we want to bail out,
hours.
we have some things.
We're camping about a mile
right
from a hotel.
We've never gone for more than two nights camping, and I've never gone more than one night just us. We generally go with more veteran seasoned campers.
Smart.
Right?
Very
because
smart.
Like the Michael Bennett's of the camping
world. Are you guys
world
going solo now? Just the Salk family?
This is just the Salk family. We did this once last year, one night. And then
praying
we came
for you
home.
All right.
There may be pizza night, too. We'll see.
Okay.
Don't
right
laugh.
It's on you, Salk.
Thank
you're the
you,
one
Mike
that's got to put this together.
No respect.
All right. John Morosi was on with Wyman and Bob yesterday. It was a great interview, if you haven't already heard it. And he said something about what the Mariners cannot do when it comes to the trade deadline. I've got to say, I absolutely agree. That's next.
You're listening to Jake and Stacey.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studios.
Streaming live on the 710 Sports app and at 710sports.com.
Now, here are your hosts, Jake Heaps and Stacey Rost.
This hour, Jake and Stacey is brought to you by Muckleshoot Casino. I mentioned earlier, John Morosi was on with Wyman and Bob the other day. It was a great interview. If you haven't heard it already, it's fantastic. Recommend it. But we've got a cut that we want to point to when it comes to the Mariners remaining potentially open-minded about their future outfield options. As we know, the trade deadline is going to be coming up. And John Morosi the other day had a tweet about Taylor Trammell that was a little controversial because Taylor Trammell didn't have the best success in his debut with the Mariners, ended up getting sent down to AAA, and he's been raking at AAA. He's got an OPS over 1,000, slashing 434, 458, 830, 5 home runs, 16 RBI. And so given those numbers, even though it's in the minors, given those numbers, John Morosi the other day said, well, this might be one of the more interesting people in baseball because you have some teams very much in need of an outfielder, and they could be looking at a guy like Taylor Trammell, especially with an organization like Seattle that kind of has a bevy of options there. So first, let's take a listen to what John Morosi had to say about the Mariners remaining open-minded.
It's a great question, and to me, I think that the Mariners are and will remain open-minded on a number of different solutions here. Obviously, not all of them are going to be able to play together in the long term. So clearly, someone is either going to leave, whether it's via free agency with Haniger when he gets there, or someone's going to get extended, or there are obviously injuries that happen, but it's merely pointing out that at a time when a lot of teams around the major leagues have issues with their outfield and need outfield help, especially lefty bats in the outfield like the Yankees, like the White Sox, like some other teams, that Trammell is a really interesting player.
So, do the Mariners, A, consider trading Taylor Trammell, and B, maybe the more important conversation is what kind of mindset do they need with this trade deadline and with some of their young guys moving forward? Because let's be real, not only are not all these prospects and these guys going to work out, but they may choose to turn some of them for additional pieces because they're going to need those pieces if they want to contend.
Right. That's also part of having a great farm system, right, is that you're able to go and acquire great players, great talent, because you're able to put your prospects in those deals, in those trade deals. And so that's always going to be a part of the equation for the Mariners, and I think we'll see that down the line at some point in time. Could Taylor Trammell be one of those players? John Morosi thinks there's a good possibility. I mean, I don't know if any other players, you know, come to mind or stand out to anybody else, but at some point that probably will happen. When it comes to the Mariners being open-minded, Jerry DePoto is one of those guys. He's very much like John Schneider in that way that, look, they're always looking and talking with people, right? They're always looking into every option, every scenario, and are very open-minded about what can be. Now, I would argue that guys like Mitch Haniger, Kendall Graveman, at some point you do have to have veteran players on this team, and you have to stop trading players in order for you to build a winner, in order for you to build a consistent winner moving forward and not just continuing to keep the promise of, well, wait till the next wave comes through, wait till the next wave comes through, right? And that never-ending cycle, you do have to put your, put down your flagpole at some point. And I think that Mitch Haniger is one of those guys. But at the same time, I don't know if the Mariners have the luxury of being closed-minded at this point. Mm. I think they have to be open to every option that is available for them. And if there is a deal that is worthwhile, then yeah, you got to capitalize on that. You got to take advantage of it. Just Mitch Haniger, I think he's one of those guys that is definitely worth keeping here in Seattle and not worth trading.
That's the thing. I know that, you know, it always used to be Trader Jerry. And so people were kind of shocked when they stood pat more recently and then didn't make many moves at all in free agency. Like, people kept thinking, like, is Jerry okay? What's going on here with the Mariners? Ended up not doing much of anything. What I hope is that should they move some pieces, and this isn't a unique hope, that it's the right pieces. Like, I would hate to see them bank their future on a pitching prospect they have that doesn't work out in lieu of keeping someone who certainly works out but is a little bit older, like Haniger. Like, DJ, you pointed to they have those three pitchers, one of which, Logan Gilbert, made his debut, and then Hancock and Kirby down the line. And you said, I could absolutely see them flipping one of those guys.
I don't want to say names, but...
Just say names, DJ.
It seems like with them, how high they are on Gilbert, and then how high them and scouts are on Emerson Hancock being a frontline pitcher, or maybe best case scenario, an ace level pitcher, it seems like, yeah, George Kirby might be the odd man out. He doesn't walk a lot of people, but a lot of scouting reports you see, yeah, he hits his spots really well. He won't walk people, but the bad part about him always hitting his spots, he kind of gets hit hard a little bit. He has a 3.12 ERA right now in Everett, which he's doing pretty good, but, you know, his strikeouts are a little down than where they're used to seeing him. So I could see him being the odd man out, honestly.
Okay. So, I mean, that will be one to watch for, DJ. I mean, that's not necessarily saying that it's going to happen this year.
No, DJ
right
knows.
Down the road. But I think that that's something that is always going to be on the table for you. But in terms of this year, in terms of this upcoming trade deadline, it has to be of great value and of great return for you to give up on somebody like Taylor Trammell. Because again, as we talked about before, it's not like this outfield is fully loaded,
now,
fully stacked, and it is consistent, right?
Yeah.
There are still unknowns to this group. And Taylor Trammell, if he continues to keep hitting well at the AAA level, we might see him get called up here to the bigs at some point again this season. And now you have a very solid rotation with four outfielders that you feel like can contribute with their bat, with their defense, and feel confident about that. That's a valuable asset to have. And while Julio Rodriguez is continuing to develop in the minor leagues, you're not willing to go, and I wouldn't be willing to part ways with someone like Taylor Trammell unless it was a value of a return that I just simply could not pass up. Now, the whole point of this, though, is as John Morosi said, there is that possibility that other teams could value Taylor Trammell that way, that they might look at that player and say, we have a serious need here. We think that this guy's talented enough to help that void, and we're willing to give up valuable pieces for that. If you're Jerry DePoto, I don't think you can be closed-minded about it. I don't think you can sit there and say, Taylor Trammell is my guy. He's going to be in our system no matter what. You have to be open-minded at all times if you're the Mariners at this stage of the game, which I anticipate Jerry being, but I just don't want them to dish out players just for the sake of dishing out players. It better be of great value and return.
All right, we are taking you around the diamond thanks to Shane Company, your friend in the jewelry business. The Mariners continue their series against the Texas Rangers tonight. Justice Sheffield will be making the start. First pitch is at 7:10 p.m. Pre-game show starts at 6 p.m. right here on 710 ESPN Seattle. And that's Around the Diamond, brought to you by Shane Company, your friend in the jewelry business. Guys, can Julio Jones be quite as deadly at 33? 30s are the new 20s, by the way, Jake, with a new team? We certainly hope not if he ends up in the NFC West. Let's ask Michael Bumpus about that, plus about vets skipping OTAs next.